Today's really got to be the most amazing day in all human history. We can relate to the events of Good Friday. We all have friends who've died. One day we'll die ourselves, but today is a day that it's very difficult to relate to in the sense that none of us have ever actually met someone come back from the dead, because only once has this happened, with no human intervention. And this movement that began this day within 20 years had reached Imperial Rome and Caesar's palace itself. And when you look at it, you think, what hope did these early Christians have? Rome was so strong and so powerful. It was the imperial outfit that ruled the world. And the Christians were just a ragtag bunch of followers. But two centuries later, we call our children after those early followers. We call them Paul and John and Mary and Peter. And we call our dogs Caesar and Nero. Who could have imagined the events of this day and what would happen, that the whole world and its power structure would actually be turned upside down? So what I want to do this morning is look at four incidents that happened that amazing day, one from each of the Gospels, because each of the Gospels tell different stories about the events of that amazing day. It was just so overwhelming, there was so much happened, that between them we can get a bit of a picture of the events. And the first one is from Matthew, and it tells a story of a journey from fear to faith. Matthew 28. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him, they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I've told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. The women, not surprisingly, were distraught that first Sunday morning. They had believed in Jesus. They'd followed him. They found this man related to them unlike any other men, with such love and tenderness and compassion, and they'd become devoted followers. And so they go down to do the only thing they could do on the Sunday morning, is to go and anoint his body, preserve it. And they have this close encounter of a spiritual kind. There's this earthquake, and an angel appears, and unlike angels in most pictures that are pretty feminine sort of creatures, it's described here as his appearance was like lightning, and the guards were so afraid of him, they shook and became like dead men. You know, this is a being from the other world. This is a powerful encounter. And the angel says to them, you know, why are you looking for Jesus here among the dead? You know, he's alive. He's risen. You go ahead of you into Galilee, and that's where you'll meet him. You know, there's an amazing place for women in the Gospels. There's nothing else in all the literature from the ancient world, nothing like the Gospels about the life of Jesus in order of the place that women find in them. Because women basically were second-class citizens in the Roman Empire. Their testimony was not accepted in court. They were felt to be too emotional, as though men were unemotional, and so forth. And then here's these accounts. And in a strange kind of way, one of the most powerful arguments for the authenticity of the story of the resurrection is that it's women who appear in the story as the first witnesses to the resurrection. Now, if you were making this up, as some people suggest, the last thing in the world you would have done in the first century world is to make women as the key witnesses to the reality of this whole thing. People would laugh you to scorn which is, in a strange kind of way, a real kind of tangible evidence that, hey, this is actually a true account. And these women, they go down to the tomb, they're filled with fear. And their fear turns to faith. I wonder how many of you have come in here this morning and you're fearful. You're apprehensive. You fear tomorrow. These women would have feared tomorrow. They'd put their trust in Jesus. Now he was gone. They were all on their own. And they felt filled with apprehension. Maybe that's you. You've come in here this morning and you're thinking of something that lies ahead of you. You're filled with apprehension. Let me suggest to you this morning, what you need to do is do what these women did. And they put their trust in Jesus because they met him again. He was alive. That's the first thing, first little picture. The second one is from Mark's gospel. It's a story of moving from failure to forgiveness. This is from Mark 16. From Mark 16, verse 6. Don't be alarmed. This is the angel speaking again. Don't be alarmed, he said. You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. The interesting, when Mark related the same incident that Matthew did, he mentioned one other thing, just two words that are in Mark's account. And it's thought that Mark wrote as Mark was very close to Peter, and that Mark's gospel is actually the recollections of Peter of the events of the first Easter. And so he writes just two words in there that the angel told them, that you're to go to Galilee and so go tell his disciples and Peter. And Peter would have remembered that. Perhaps the others, as they came to write the account, it was like a comment of no consequence. But for Peter, this meant everything. Because you see, Peter had failed. He desperately failed Jesus. He was full of confidence. Jesus said to them on the night of the Last Supper, he said, you're all going to betray me and you'll all run away. Peter said, not me, Lord. All the others may, but not me. You ever felt like that? Other people may not make it in the Christian life, but I'm going to. That's what I'm going to do. And Jesus said, I tell you, before the night's out, before the rooster crows in the morning, you'll deny me three times. Peter said, oh no. And then they end up in the house of the high priest, and there's a young servant girl there, and she says, I recognize this man. He was with the Galilean. He's one of them. And he begins to curse and swear and deny that he even knew Jesus. And then the rooster crows early in the morning. And we read, Peter went out and he wept bitterly. Maybe you've shed tears like that. I guess a lot of us have times in our lives. We've resolved that I'm not going to do this. I'm really not going to do it, whatever it is. Maybe we've even made bold claims about it. And we've failed. And we're overwhelmed with a sense of failure. And we've wept tears. If that's you, there's hope for you. There's hope in the words of the angel who came to these women and he said, go and tell the disciples and Peter. Because Peter needed to be reassured that he too could be forgiven. Because he was just overwhelmed. He had failed. And he had failed publicly. And everyone knew that he'd failed. Just a young servant girl. And he lacked the courage to stand up, do what was right. Maybe that's you. Something has happened to you and you know I failed. I feel overwhelmed with a sense of failure. Peter, starting that morning, was to go on a journey with Jesus and eventually ended up on the seashore where Jesus three times asked him whether he loved him, as Peter had denied Jesus three times. And three times Peter had to reassure him that he did love him. And who would have guessed that 6 weeks on from this day, it would have been Peter who'd be standing in the market square in Jerusalem preaching to this huge crowd of people and saying to them that this Jesus whom you killed, God has raised from the dead. But talk about fearlessness at that point. Laying it on this crowd. You are the people who've killed him, but God has raised him from the dead. What on earth happened? I mean, this is one of the biggest evidences for the resurrection. How could a person who was such a coward, really, faced with a young servant girl, could turn into a fearless man and 6 weeks later proclaiming the good news that Jesus was alive? There's hope for you. Now, if you fail, God hasn't given up on you. I know you feel he has. Because when you fail and you feel bad and you shed tears, as Peter shed tears, you really feel my spiritual life is over. And the message of that Sunday morning is that it's not. God has remembered you. Go tell his disciples and Peter. I'm going before them into Galilee. And then there's a third story from Luke. It's a story of a transition from despair to delight. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped he was going to be the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place." Despair turned to delight. We had hoped. You ever been like this? You know, you put your trust in a cause or in a group of people, and somehow they've let you down, and you kind of like your world crashes in. I feel like I've got nothing left to live for. I read a story a little while ago about this guy who had... He wrote a book called The God Who Failed, and he'd become the follower of an Indian guru, and he'd gone through the hippie trail in Asia and so on and ended up in India following this person, and he'd invested his life in this thing. But he got to where this guru had his headquarters. He found to his amazement that he lived in absolute opulence in the midst of great poverty, and he said his whole world crashed in, and he'd given everything to follow this guru, and the whole thing had failed. Now, it's never like that with Jesus, because he was the friend of the poor and the downtrodden and the weak. But he died, and he seemed to offer so much. And Cleopas and his friend, or his wife, probably, they said that, you know, we'd hoped he was the one. You know, we'd been waiting for centuries for the Messiah, this one who will redeem Israel. And we thought, finally we've found him. This is the man. And he's dead. Maybe you're like that. Maybe you've put your trust in something or some group or someone, and now you're despairing. Well, there's a second part to this story. Of course, Cleopas and his wife invite the stranger into their home. And we read from verse 30, "When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked to us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?'" You know what you've got to do if you feel despairing? If you feel you've been let down, you've put your hope so much in someone or a group, you know what you've got to do? You've got to meet Jesus. Because he never lets you down. They felt he had let them down. They felt, you know, we'd hoped so much he was the one. He's the one who will redeem Israel. We've put our trust in him. We've become his followers. But he's alive. And they met him. "Did not our hearts burn within us?" they said, "when he talked to us on the road and open the scriptures to us. So you're despairing. Well, people will fail you. That's life. And groups will let you down. That's life too. It always happens. But the message of Easter Sunday is that there is one who won't let us down because he's been raised from the dead. And in our sense of despair, we can trust him. He's alive. And then there's a fourth story from John. It's a story of a movement from doubt to devotion. John chapter 20. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We've seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Busy day for Jesus. First of all, he appears to the woman at the graveside. Then he's walking on the road to Emmaus outside of Jerusalem. And then later that night, he comes back into Jerusalem and walks in on the group of the disciples and says, "Peace be with you." And they disbelieved for joy. But one of them wasn't there. I mean, Judas had gone off by this stage to betray Jesus, and he'd hung himself. So there were only 11 left, and one of them wasn't there. And so to these 10 people, Jesus appeared. But Thomas, he wasn't there for some reason. And when the others told him later that night, "We've seen the Lord," he said, "I'm not going to believe that." That's amazing. I mean, if you've got 10 friends, and you've spent 3 years with them, and you know they're people of real integrity, and all 10 of them say to you, "The most incredible thing has happened. I know we've seen Jesus die, but do you know he actually has come back from the grave?" Now, all 10, and this is not like one person says, "I've had a vision of Jesus alive." No, it's not that. It's that all of us have seen this happen. And the women have told us in the morning, and Cleopas has actually run all the way back in from Emmaus to tell them, and he's told them too. And Thomas says, "I'm not going to believe that." You know, with doubt, we all have doubts, but there's two kinds of doubt. There's reasonable doubt, and there's unreasonable doubt. And Thomas was verging right over into having unreasonable doubt. You see, because all of us have got to believe in the resurrection of Jesus because of the testimony of these 12 and the others who saw it. We don't have the privilege of actually meeting Jesus alive, raised from the dead. And so Jesus had a word for Thomas about that. But first of all, his first word to Thomas was not one of condemnation. "What a useless critter you are that you don't believe these your mates." He appears a week later. A week goes by and he walks in on the disciples again. And he says to Thomas, "You know, see my hands and my side where they put the spear. Put your hands here," and he said, "stop your doubt and believe." And we don't even know that Thomas ever got anywhere near putting his hands in Jesus' hands, because he ends up on the ground just in front of Jesus saying, "My Lord and my God." And Jesus goes on to say to Thomas, "Well, Thomas, other people are going to have to believe on the testimony of these disciples, and blessed are those who believe. And too bad you couldn't, Thomas." But some of you will be like Thomas this morning. You say, "I don't know if I can believe this stuff. I mean, dead people don't come back to life, do they?" And that's true, they don't. Dead people don't come back to life. And nowhere in the New Testament does it say that Jesus just like came back to life. What it says is that God raised him from the dead. And this is a one-off event. And it's no use saying, "Well, give me the proof, show me someone else who's coming back to life." Well, there won't be anyone else like this, because this is a unique, unrepeatable occurrence. God has entered our humanity as one of us and has demonstrated the truth of this by raising his son from the dead. And so this morning, whether you're filled with fear or despair or failure or doubt, you can bring these to Jesus. He's alive. You can trust him. You really can. But you've got to be prepared to come to him, open your heart to him, and to trust him. We're going to screen a movie tonight about Lee Strobel. Lee Strobel was an atheist in America, and he was a journalist, and he believed the whole story about Jesus was a legend. But his wife became a follower of Jesus, and he started going along to church, and he came to the conviction there was more to this than he thought, and so he started his own research. And he came across a German theologian, a man named Julius Müller. And this Julius Müller said can you find, he issued a challenge to sort of scholarly people right throughout Europe. This is in the 19th century when people started to say, oh, this is just a legend. And Strobel believed it was a legend. He's like, you know, it's just a story. Jesus being raised from the dead, just a legend. And this man, Julius Müller, issued a challenge to the intellectual people of Europe. Can you find, he said, one other example in all human history of a famous person around whom legends have eventually grown, that this happened in the same generation as that person's followers were alive? Now, all famous people over a period of time have legends develop around them. But these legends develop over 200 or 300 years because they can't develop in the lifetime of people who are followers, because they were there and they knew what happened. And so Müller, way back in the 19th century, issued that challenge, and it was greeted with deafening silence because no one has ever been able to refute it. No one, ever. This isn't a legend. This isn't just like a just-so story. This actually happened. Jesus came back from the dead, and he's alive. And this morning, if you are overwhelmed with a sense of fear or failure or despair or doubt, you come. Open your heart to Jesus. Put your trust in him, and he's alive. You can trust him. Let's bow our heads together in prayer. Lord Jesus, we just want to thank you so much that you rose from the dead in power. And that whether we are fearful and apprehensive, or we feel overwhelmed with a sense of failure, or we're despairing, or we're plagued with doubts, Lord, I pray, help us to open our hearts to you and to put our trust in you, because we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.